Good morning. This is Marlene Howell filling in this morning for Talk Radio. And I'm going to start right now this morning giving you the number because I know you are going to want to call and talk to our guest. Our number is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. The reason I think you're going to want to talk with our guest is because she is Serena Barton, a local artist, art teacher, counselor, who will be teaching a class this summer through Portland State Women's Studies program called Women, Creativity, and Healing. And that is actually also the topic for this morning's discussion, Women, Creativity, and Healing. Now, I know a lot of times we divide the idea of the arts from the idea of women's personal and political lives, but what's so exciting about a course like this is that it brings them together and that it really lives in that intersection of bringing together our voices with our ability to be creative with our needs to heal. So if you'd like to talk with Serena about her class or about some of your experiences with the arts being a part of how you have experienced healing and how that healing has impacted your political voice, I want to make sure that you do have this number because you will want to call us. It's 503-231-8187. And so I'd like to start now by just introducing our guests and saying good morning, Serena, and thank you for coming into the studio so early this morning. And I'd like to invite you to tell us a little bit about the class and how you came to develop it and just some of your thoughts around why this is an important area for women to be in tune with.
Thank you, Marlene. Thanks for inviting me. Well, this is a really exciting class for me to teach, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity. The class was first developed by Linda Hummer of Portland State, and so I give her credit for coming up with the wonderful idea of bringing kind of the three strands together, women's studies, women in creativity, and creativity in women, and how healing that can be. It's a long story, and I won't tell it all here, but I kind of stumbled joyfully into the opportunity to take over the class when Linda was unable to do so for health reasons. And it's very exciting for me because it's always a growing thing. I'm always finding new material that I want to incorporate, and the students are absolutely amazing. I teach the class on the main campus and then also through the Extended Studies program, which takes me to Portland State classes out at Mount Hood Community College and also the various campuses of PCC. So the idea of the class is looking at a few examples of the many, of the various ways that women, both past and present, famous and not famous, use their creativity to heal themselves, both from external and internal trauma and oppression, and how women also use creative activities and creative means to heal communities.
And healing communities is so very, very important, especially in a world that is so full of conflict and pain. I often wonder in areas where people are living as refugees or as internally displaced people, how powerful the arts could be as a part of the healing process, as the part of reconnecting with personal agency.
Right, right. I think that is that's absolutely been shown over and over again. And that's material that I like to provide in the class, give lots of examples. One project that I covered was one from several years ago from Nancy Deutsch, I believe her name is, and she published a book of photographs and poems by women who lived in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco. And there were very young women, maybe I think six or seven were the youngest, and also teens, mothers, and elders. And it was so powerful. And in the class, I have people, the students read from the poems. And then, I should explain that part of the class involves the students using their own creativity. And they don't have to have any what you'd call art background or anything like that. But rather than writing papers, what they do is that they put together an altered book based on the material that we cover. And I'll explain what that is for those who don't know. And they also do a creative project talking about women or a woman in various who use their creativity in various ways. And it can be anything from women in music or a particular composer or singer or women in the sciences or ways in which their own mothers and grandmothers were creative in ways that were healing for their family and community.
Okay, Serena, I'm going to just butt in here for a moment. Good morning to those of you who just tuned in. This is Marlene Howell filling in for Talk Radio this morning. My guest this morning is PSU professor and local artist Serena Barton, and we're talking about women, creativity, and healing. If you would like to join the conversation, the number is 503-231-8187. So Serena was just getting ready to tell us a little bit about one project she does in her class, which is the Altered Book Project. So why don't you go ahead with that, Serena?
And, okay.
Anyone who wants to call, you are welcome to get started with that.
Okay. Well, that actually was something that I know that Linda Hummer did in her class. I found out I was going to teach this class the first time, which was several years ago, kind of about 10 days before the class. And so it really stretched my creativity. I didn't have a lot of information on what had gone on in the class before, but enough to give me the basic feel for it. But one of the things that Linda had her students do was create an altered book. And as an artist, I'd always seen altered books and thought, oh, someday I want to do that. So the truth is, once I committed to teaching the class, I wanted to keep that idea. So I rushed around and created my first altered book.
It looks like we have a caller, so I might just butt in. I might just butt in here for a moment.
Sure.
And say good morning to the caller. And we'll continue with the story of the altered book right after we talk to this caller. So good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. It's interesting to hear what you're talking about. I just wanted to share a possible resource with you. You might have to do some digging. In fact, it makes me want to. But in the 70s, a woman named Anna Halperin,
yes,
in San Francisco created the San Francisco Dancers Workshop, which I participated in an intensive 1 year. And my recall, if I'm correctly describing her story, is that she was dealing with cancer, and the workshop, I mean, her personal experience with dance helped her in her healing process. So,
oh, that's great.
I think she's probably...
Well, here's that's
an... extremely powerful,
yes,
woman, very powerful. And the workshop did incorporate some drawing, but it incorporated a lot of improvisational dancing and meditation about what in our bodies and in our histories we were working on.
That must have been a powerful experience.
It was, and it's good for me this morning just even to remember that I had that experience, because one of the things I remember her sharing was that you can call on that resource at any time, and when you know you're going through something in your body, to take the time and create a dance around that, you know, just by yourself. It's not,
yes,
necessarily for performance.
Right.
But I think she was also responsible for the first city dances, you know, that anybody could join, and encouraged diverse groups of people to participate in the 70s. And brought lots of ethnic and racial groups together. I don't know about people with developmental disabilities and people with physical disabilities, how they participated. I've been thinking about that lately. So, thank you.
Thank you. Well, did you participate in the, or attend, whichever way you look at it, the recent city dance that was done here in Portland?
No, I saw something about it. But,
yeah.
But I guess I would like to get involved again, and I'd be glad to give my email address offline.
Okay, that would be great. That's when I first became acquainted with Anna Halperin's work.
Oh, good.
And it was a very, very powerful experience.
Do you know if she's still in her body? Or
I don't know, but you know, you have inspired me, and I really appreciate you've inspired me to do digging, because I didn't know the part about her own healing through, you know, personal healing. So I am going to dig. And
And there was some really powerful healing on her part, but I will share that she really urged us to do it at the first inkling of something might not be, you know, something might be out of balance in our bodies, because she feels that she waited too long and ended up with a colostomy and showed us her bag and so on.
Mm.
But I think that her dance highly sped up her healing process
from that surgery
and any other future cancer. She was cancer-free when she was doing those workshops that summer.
Well, that is an incredible experience to have had.
Yeah, so it'd be nice to meet you and talk to you more about it.
Yeah, I would like that.
This is Marlene, the host of the program. Let me just butt in here and ask that after we take you off the air, that maybe our engineer could get your contact information and Serena could get a hold of you. Would that be all right?
That would be awesome.
All right. Well, we appreciate the call this morning. Was there anything else you wanted to share?
No, I'm just really glad you're doing what you're doing, and I'm got some dancing to do.
There you go.
Oh, great.
All right. Well, we're going to take you off the air now, but stay online, and our engineer, John, will get your information, okay?
Thank you.
All right, callers, if you would like to be a part of the conversation this morning on Women, Creativity, and Healing with PSU professor and local artist Serena Barton, the number is 503-231-8187. And let me just make a couple comments here, and then we'll go back to Serena's discussion about altered books. The music that I started the program with this morning, it's a song called A Dreamer, and the musician is Alion Elias, and she is a jazz musician whose music I have really come to enjoy. And I know that her music often sounds like the kind of music you put on about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon with the beverage of your choice, kind of chilling out your day. But I sometimes like to start my day with that because it gets me a little calmer and a little more grounded. And I especially like the idea of the dreamer because I think the idea of the dreamer fits in real well with women, creativity, and healing, because so many times patriarchy just dashes our dreams and diminishes our connection with our own ability to be creativity.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
To be creativity. That wasn't a mistake.
To
was
embody
it?
Creativity.
That's it.
Yes.
And that, of course, is a part of healing, whether it's the healing from some kind of physical malady or some kind of political trauma. And when women claim our right to heal, we are actually making a very deep political statement.
Yes.
And that's why, you know, in feminism, even though I know it's very 80s, we did say the personal is political. And, of course, in the 21st century, we're also saying that the political is personal. But they certainly do inform each other. And I can't think of a better place to understand that inherent connection than in a course like Women, Creativity, and Healing. And plus, you come out with something.
Whether
it's a dance or a song or in your class, the altered book. So let's go on and talk about the altered book. But let's give the number for our listeners one more time if you'd like to talk with Serena Barton this morning. The number is 503-231-8187. And right now she's going to go ahead and talk a little bit more about the Altered Book Project that's a part of her class, Women, Creativity, and Healing.
Okay, I'm happy to talk about it. And if we have time, maybe I can come back to a couple points. This caller made some very interesting comments that have gotten me thinking about the aspects of the class also. But an altered book is... basically, you take an old book that is either it's something that really calls to you, or it's something that sometimes it can call to you negatively. It might be like why women should be submissive or something like that. And what you do is the physical part is involves just removing some pages, gluing some pages together, you know, making the book a size so that you can add things to it. Now, some people, initially, their response is, I couldn't tear up a book, and I really respect that because I love books. I gobble them up, and I smell them, and I love to carry them. But what I like is that the altered book is kind of a metaphor for taking something that's no longer useful, but rather than throwing it away, you alter it. You get put it through an alchemical process in a way that creates something incredibly beautiful and
meaningful. Sort of a compost.
Yeah, it's kind of like compost, exactly. Yeah, yeah, it's very transformative. The book gets transformed, and so does the bookmaker. So the students will just create the book. It was very interesting. A couple of classes ago, all the students brought books that happen to have green covers. I don't know what that was about, but it is, of course, a very green project. And I will encourage the students to scrounge for supplies, to go to SCRAP, School Community Reuse Action Project store, and find things that are very inexpensive, and maybe they're not even sure what they are. But in the books, you can paint, you can do collage, you can draw, but you don't have to have any so-called artistic ability. You can put a beautiful book together in many, many ways. The books are often, they're so layered and they're so complex, and it reminds me a lot of the layers and complexity of human beings and the transformations that we go through. And you really cannot make a mistake with this book. You know, there's so many ways you can continue to change it. And if there's absolutely a page you cannot stand, no matter what you do, then you just get rid of it. So it's something that the students really, really enjoy doing. And I am always just overwhelmed at the diversity and creativity that they show in their work. It's amazing.
You know, the artist Elizabeth Layton, who started her art career when she was 65
right.
and became very famous from the small town of Wellsville, Kansas, she for many years had struggles with mental health and depression. And when she started her artwork, her art teacher gave her two directions, and one of them was make your mistakes work for you,
mm-hmm.
and the second one was go to the edge of the paper.
Mm.
And she said those were really, in a way, so interesting to her because those were really metaphors for how she had to consider her life.
Yes,
and
yes.
How that worked for her in a way. There's another artist, landscape design artist, architect whose work I really respect. That's of Maya Lin,
mm-hmm.
you know, the designer of the Vietnam War Memorial, and of course, more recently, designer of some of the local projects here in conjunction with the Confluence Project. We have three Maya Lin installations, really within about 20 miles of where we are sitting right now,
right.
and they are all fairly new. But Maya Lin's perspective on art is that art gives us new ways of looking at old issues.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's
and
a very good way to put
that.
It. Yes.
Yeah, your book reminds me of both of those women.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Going to the edge, letting your mistakes work for you, and getting some new ways of looking at old issues.
Yes. And that is part of the point of the doing the altered book is that, yes, they have a product that they turn in for me to look at, and then I give that back to mm-hmm. them. But it's very much the process of creating it. That is changing, and therapeutically, the act of creation provides us with a means of expression of ourselves, getting things from ourselves out, and it also provides a container. So if you put something on paper or canvas or in a dance, that becomes a container for whatever it is that is going on with you.
All right. And Serena, it looks like we have a caller, Joanne. So we are going to invite Joanne to come on the air and have a conversation with Serena. Good morning, Joanne.
Oh, yes. Hello.
Hi, Joanne.
Will you please be patient with me? I got this ongoing hissing sound in my left ear.
We're totally...
And the neck and shoulder pain. So please
all right. We are, we are totally patient because I'm always glad when you call.
Okay. I'll enjoy this. I mean, you know, enjoy that, what you just said. In your class, can things be done like this? Hope I don't lose with that pain. You know, with this murder of the Dr. Tiller, I was thinking about could ever a woman, at least in this country, take back the power and right for a woman to do abortions for a woman, like midwife-type people. So I was thinking about that. That power, I don't think belongs in the medical field. I believe it belongs to woman, but anyway, so on and so forth. Another thing, I have a daughter and two biracial grandchildren. I've never healed. They started a domestic violence journey somewhere in the 80s, and a lot of heavy other issues, and they have never healed. Mm-hmm. They have never healed. So I just wonder if things like that, because they don't get the real help from these systems and so forth. And the third thing, I'm going to get off poem because of my pain and that. You know what? I don't care what people think they know or believe, intellectually or otherwise, but there is real disrespect ongoing for so long between old woman and young woman. That, I guess, is never going to be healed either. Thank you.
Thanks, Joanne. I hope you feel better soon.
All right.
So Joanne just asked us some very poignant questions. She talked about she feels that abortion really needs to be in the hands of women and not something that's medicalized in the way that it is now. She also talked about this kind of project with women creativity and healing. Can it be effective for people experiencing the aftermath of domestic violence? And then she ended with talking about the pain she has experienced through age discrimination. So, Serena, there's your list.
Okay.
Anything you'd like to share with Joanne, even though she's hung up? I know she's still listening.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Hi, Joanne. Well, that's interesting. I do have a early in the class, and I do present research and actually a film that was done from diaries on about a midwife in just post-revolutionary times who lived in Maine and Massachusetts. And one of the things that we see in this presentation is ways in which the midwife's healing knowledge began to be superseded by male doctors who did not have nearly the years of experience and skill that the women who had been taught from generation to generation had. And so that does come up. Abortion isn't specifically mentioned, but I'm sure that that was part of the midwife's career quite often. And part of the service that she did the community. The domestic violence is, in particular, the kind of trauma that does, it is very much helped by any kind of creativity, any kind of creative activity. And I have worked with a lot of people who've been involved in domestic violence, who've been victims of violence, and that's often proving very, very helpful. And the altered book, a visual journal, any kind of self-expression. I am a visual artist, so that's kind of my area of expertise. But any way of expressing ourselves is very helpful. And I think this was also relates to the question from the previous caller. One of the books, it's called The Soul's Palette, and I do present some couple of chapters from that book in the class. And one of the distinctions the author makes is between cure and healing. As we've talked about, sometimes allowing ourselves to be creative, learning that it's okay to be creative, can actually heal emotional and physical illness, or cure, seemingly, emotional and physical issues. But even when there isn't a possibility of ever erasing the trauma or curing an illness, it can still be healing to the soul and to the psyche to be involved. So I think that the healing part can still occur. And there certainly are a lot of therapists that I'm aware of, art therapists, and then others like me who are not an art therapist, but were trained in a more general counseling modality, who do incorporate creative projects as part of our therapy work. The age discrimination, I think that's something that's really pervasive in our culture. We've all heard so much about the youth culture, but I think it's particularly, I know as a former, well, I guess I'm still a baby boomer, but, you know, it's pretty cool to be sort of the center of things and be young and in the 60s and kind of feel like we knew everything. But it is quite humbling to be older and to not necessarily feel like the younger generation understands what you've been through and what you've contributed. And we do get to that in class, too. And often some of the younger women hear from the older women in class, and they hear from me about how things were not so long ago, such as even some jobs being closed to us just because we were women. And often they're quite shocked. So sometimes we do have that kind of telling stories around the campfire atmosphere that's very exciting. It's exciting to mix the generations, and I hope there's more of that coming along.
You know, it's so funny sometimes because sometimes in women's studies we have to defend our right to exist in the academy because we are sometimes said to be nothing but a bunch of women telling stories around the campfire. But I think what really...
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I was going to say, but I think one of the reasons that on another level that is kind of frightening is because out of those stories often comes a renewed sense of political action. I'm
yes.
sure the suffragists and the abolitionists told a lot of stories
yes.
around the campfire,
Power
too.
Power and healing. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, when Carrie Chapman Catt gave her famous speech talking about the end of the suffrage movement, one of the things she said was that those who started never met those who ended the movement because it was a 52-year movement.
Yeah.
Those who started it just had to have some hope that it would succeed, and those who ended it could only read about their sisters who had since passed on.
Mm.
So that idea
mm-hmm.
of, you know, age and, you know, handing over the struggle and handing over what you know and asking those who continue it on to move it along. I think very poignant
mm-hmm.
and also very frightening to powers it be. And it looks like we've got another caller, so let's go right to the phone. Good morning, Jeff. How are you today?
I'm well. Thanks for asking. Good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you quite sincerely. I'll also quickly mention, just because I just heard it, I think the movement is by no means at an end. And in fact, these movements for human liberty, for freedom and for expression and for communication and ultimately community and perhaps at the ultimate end, atonement, which means at-one-ment, which I think the human race is wanting more desperately than anything, but that each movement that frees people up really never ends, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. Absolutely.
And I really called to say thank you so much for differentiating the very important differentiation between two four-letter words. The first one is cure. Well, we all seek a cure. The ultimate cure, as far as we know, is death. So
right.
you might not want to look for cure. Often we turn to pharmaceuticals, etc. The other four-letter word is heal. Now, thank you for differentiating between those two. As an HIV disease patient, that has worked for me over the years to realize, indeed, there's no cure. In fact, the therapy that I take, this lifelong experimental chemotherapy, mm-hmm. is just that. But healing is quite vastly different, and I applaud your work, and I thank you for taking my telephone call.
Absolutely. Are you involved in any kind of art?
Well, yes, by the way. I'm a cartoonist.
Oh, well, there you go. There you
Wonderful.
Go.
Wonderful.
Good for you.
And I applaud your effort because it's true. I mean, you don't necessarily you need to know how to draw. I'm lucky enough to have that, I don't know if you call it a talent or a skill. I guess it started as a talent and you hold it and it becomes a skill. But every movement we make is a kind of art and dance. And if we embrace that seriously, we can bridge these horrid differences in our society, between men and women even.
Mm-hmm.
I'm neither a woman-hater nor a man-hater. I'm sometimes a misanthrope because I hate them all, but seriously, we can bridge these differences if we make our life itself a work of art. So, sorry to take your time, and thanks so much again.
It's
you.
Nice to hear from you. Bye-bye. This morning. Okay, so if you're just tuning in, this is Marlene Howell, and we are doing talk radio this morning with a guest, Serena Barton, a PSU professor and a local artist who will soon be offering a course called Women, Creativity, and Healing. So we are talking about her course as well as her bigger picture regarding the use of art in everyday life and the use of art as a conveyor of healing all kinds of woundedness. So if you would like to be a part of that conversation, perhaps call and talk about the art you do, the art you would like to do, perhaps the art you think you cannot do, give us a call. And the number is 503-231-8187. Now, last year, Serena, you had a show at the Onda Gallery here
yes.
in Portland.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the themes in my own art is often kind of depicting in various ways the lives of women artists and writers of the past. I kind of, in my own mind, experience the past and the present at the same time. I have a real sense of wanting that continuity and feeling akin to people who have lived before me. I think we all build on each other, and as the caller Jeff said, it never ends, that kind of desire to create and to connect is always there. So I had two women in particular that I used as a theme for that show, and one was Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz, who was a poet, a 17th century poet who lived in Mexico.
Mean.
Yes, and became a nun in part because that was really the only option that allowed her to continue to study and to create. She was quite, I'm sure we would call her profoundly gifted today, amazingly gifted woman, who struggled, of course. At one point she had to deal with the Inquisition from Spain, and that, as we know, is synonymous with evil and fear. But she was amazingly inspiring. And I also, another woman whom I do cover in one of my weekend classes for PSU was Veronica Franco, who is a Renaissance poet and proto-feminist in Italy. And it would seem in some ways that she was the opposite of Sor Juana because she had a very successful career as a very highly placed courtesan. My view is that both women chose their careers out of the limited options that they had. Juana did not wish to marry. She knew quite rightly that that would end her life of the mind and of the soul. Veronica had an early bad marriage, and of course there was no way to end a marriage in those days, so her choice was to become a courtesan, as her mother had been, or to become a nun, for which she wasn't suited. And she would not have been able to continue her education in her milieu had she chosen to become a nun. So both these women chose marginal careers, careers at the edge. But I think their great love, both of them, was poetry and was creativity. And their careers were a means to an end. So I kind of saw them that if they had met, that they probably would have understood each other well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and that's always a part of it, isn't it? Trying to understand each other.
Yes.
And then understand each other well. So, listeners, I've got a question for you to consider now that you've heard some of this amazing discussion with Serena Barton. What are your feelings regarding art and healing? Do you feel or have you experienced art as a healer in your own life? If you'd like to give us a call and talk about that, it's 503-231-8187. You know, my first degree was in music therapy, and I worked for many years as a music therapy. As a music therapist. It's funny because I seem to always end up in fields that, you know, a lot of people have never heard of. I mean, forever I was being asked, what's music therapy? And now, of course, I'm always asked, what's women's studies? So it just moves along. And when I was asked the question, what's music therapy, I always used to say, well, it's just sing and dance your problems away. And people would laugh,
yes,
you know?
Yes,
but now
yes.
that I think about it, it's really not that bad
That's
of
really
an answer.
That's really what it is. You know,
and when
we
bad.
Talk about art, I'm talking about it as a really, really broad definition, not just a visual art, which happens to be my field, but as you say, music,
yeah.
dance, even creativity that can come in other areas, anything that engages your mind and allows you to express and contain your feelings.
Absolutely. So, listeners, while you're thinking about the connections of art and healing and whether you have experienced art as a healer or if you'd like to talk about that and give us a call, let me share with you what will be coming up in the next few hours on KBOO Radio. At 9 o'clock, you'll hear from David Bloom, the executive director of the International Institute for Ecological Agriculture, and he'll be talking about how we can improve and optimize sustainable food and fuel production. At 9:30, we will look at how and why people yearn to watch and be watched using techniques ranging from reality TV to Facebook to complex spy technologies. And we'll hear from the author of a new book called The Peep Diaries. At 10, we'll hear headlines, interviews, and commentary on KBOO's own Air Cascadia with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio. You'll hear from Dr. Mads Gilbert, Norwegian physician who treated victims of Israel's war on the people of Palestine, who talks about his experience and the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Plus, bringing sustainable agriculture practices from Kenya to the U.S., we'll hear about a new movement in urban gardening called aquaponics. And at 11, Tony Tabora-Roberts speaks with Julia Bergman-Sender and Vivian Nassif, producers of the Academy Award-nominated film The Garden, which in fact opens in Portland today. And then finally, to round out the morning at 11:30, host Natalie Buto interviews Deborah Porta, Pride Northwest Board President, and Doris Rush, Chair of the Juneteenth Portland Committee. All reasons to stay tuned to KBOO Radio 90.7 on the FM dial here in Portland. So we're speaking this morning with Serena Barton, and we're wondering if any of you callers would like to talk about the connections between healing and art. Now, as I've mentioned before, one of my favorite artists is Maya Lin, and of course the quote I mentioned earlier that art allows us to look at old problems in new ways. And I think about that in relation to some of the work she's done with the Confluence Project here in the Northwest, where she's bringing together concepts regarding what was going on in this area at the time when Lewis and Clark arrived here, with what are the current feelings of the indigenous peoples of the area with how things have changed ecologically. So she brings together a lot of different strands into the work that she's doing. And so I'm wondering, with you, Serena, what kind of strands do you often see people weaving together in the work that they do in your classes?
Well, the work they do in their books and in their presentations, I didn't say too much about the presentations,
yeah,
but the presentations involve, again, choosing a woman or a woman as an example of how creativity can be healing, either in her own life, or sometimes people will choose, for example, a kind of music or a person's work like Maya Lin, whose work has inspired them and helped heal them. And that project also includes the student either doing a creative, actually physical project or process that is creative, so they don't just give a report, or involving the class in an activity. So I probably need to hear your question again. What kind of strands people weave together?
Yes, what kind of strands do they weave together?
Yeah, I would say the books are really an amazing synthesis of personal and political.
Okay.
And I think the fact that students really get excited about the idea of using found pieces of things in their books. It's not about going out to the art supply store necessarily, although I love art supply stores, and some of my best friends own art supply stores, putting them down. But to supplement, anyway, with things that you find, with things that strike you, so that it becomes a really kind of an extension of the person's self. But in the book, the students do visual and or written representations of the material that we discuss in class,
okay,
which is personal and political, women healing individually and in community. So that all goes into the book, and each book is very different.
Okay, so those of you who've been listening to Serena, if you would like to get in touch with her regarding her upcoming class or some of the work she does in our community, she has said it's okay to give out her professional email mm-hmm. on the air. It's very simple. It's the letter S followed by the letter B at pdx.edu. So that's S as in Serena, B as in Barton, at pdx.edu. If you'd like to know more about her class or some of the work she does in the community around the issue of women, creativity, and healing. Now, about a year ago, a book was published by someone pretty well known here in the Portland area, Linda Berry. Mm-hmm. And as you and I were talking about on the way over here today, in her book, What It Is, which is the name of the newest book, What It Is, she really popularizes and in a way highlights the idea that even if as a child you were told on any number of levels from any number of people who had authority in your life that you can't be creative, you shouldn't be creative, you should leave creativity to the experts, and you felt that on some level, in some ways, your creativity was shut down, that doesn't mean that it's not still there waiting for you to come back and say, come on, let's engage with each other. And that's really what she does in that book. She has a whole list of how to sort out some of your feelings about creativity with actually starting to create.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering about your thoughts regarding that idea that no matter when we were told we have to shut up and line up and forget about drawing or forget about making music and quit singing because we're always off key.
Right, right.
And stop dancing because it looks goofy.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know.
Might have to hold me down here because this is my absolute obsessive passion.
All right, all right.
Which is partly because as a child I did a lot of visual art. My father was a commercial artist, as they called it in those days. I suppose today you call him a graphic artist or graphic designer, but those were the old days where everything was done by hand. I inherited these tiny little scalpel things for moving, cutting and pasting and moving things around.
Wow.
So he was very exact. And in some ways, he taught me and encouraged me. And in other ways, he was trying to be helpful, I know. But in some ways, he discouraged me because he wanted me to do things the way he did. And that's not my style. I can't. But he couldn't do the things the way I did either. And
yeah.
Later, he came to admire the way I did it. But yeah, that my passion in my work at PSU and in my other teaching work that I do or workshops that I lead is to advocate and encourage and facilitate the rebirth of people's feelings of creativity. I didn't come back to visual art until I was in my mid-40s. So if anyone tells me, late 40s almost, but if anybody says, oh, it's too late, it's not too late. And there are so many ways to create for your own pleasure and your own healing. One of the things a previous caller mentioned that he was a cartoonist, and of course that's what, you know, how that's the medium that Linda Berry uses. And I think that's really powerful. Even if you can only, say, draw stick figures, it doesn't matter. I think one of the things that strikes me about Linda Berry in particular is that she is able to look on the events of her life and of others with compassion and respect and humor.
Yes, the humor piece is big.
Humor piece is very important.
Yes.
And it's very important to not be humorous about things when and if they are not humorous, but it's also helpful sometimes to get distance from something by using humor. And I often have therapy clients and students, and I do this myself, make a cartoon strip of something that has happened. And once you kind of get that distance and start to see it in a humorous way, it doesn't mean that the issue isn't important or that it wasn't painful, but it also does give a sense of a little bit of ironic distance and start to kind of heal the self and differentiate. Oh, this is kind of the cartoon that happened, but that's not who I am.
You know, just to interrupt momentarily mm-hmm. here, in language. I love language, and in language, one of the constructions of language that really interests me is the preposition. And when I'm hearing you talk here, I'm hearing you say it's not about laughing at; it's about laughing with.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And just how that little change in preposition really shifts the focus.
Yes. So yes, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, in addition to all of the work Serena does as an artist in our community, as I think you've already heard her allude to, she's also a counselor in private practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see people in the counseling, more traditional kind of counseling setting. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes.
And, you know, I have some clients who have some interest in working with art or writing as part of their therapy. And then I have many clients who don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I do work with children, so we will use art and something called sand tray therapy.
And tell us about that.
Well, I'm not an expert on it.
That's
I'm
okay.
still learning. A sand tray is just a box of sand, you know, and the therapist will have a variety of all kinds of figures. And adults often participate in this kind of therapy as well. And it involves just kind of arranging the figures in ways that intuitively come to you, and kind of seeing how these different trays that people make evolve over time. Because often, you know, I mean, I have a lot to quarrel with Freud about, as we all do.
You have a lot to quarrel with. That'll have to be another show.
Yeah,
Serena.
That'll have to be another show. But, you know, he did kind of introduce us to the idea that not all our feelings and urges are accessible to us.
Okay.
So these are ways to kind of tease out what may be really going on.
Okay, absolutely. And it looks like we do have a caller, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, well, good morning. You are on the air and talking with Serena Barton.
Howdy. I did art therapy. I was a art therapy client in the 1980s, and I was raised by a very left-brained mom. And I'm a very right-brained person, and so I was told when I was coloring and such, keep within the lines.
Mm-hmm.
That was mainly it. So I was pretty stifled. And in art therapy, and actually afterwards when I got out of it, I realized that I had this great artist, and I'm using air quotes, within. I used to get out my anger by using Mr. Sketch markers because of the bright, bold colors, and also the smells would evoke things. I really like them a lot because they do. The scents of them evoke other things, and I think that we forget about the other senses. In fact, my significant other calls him Mr. Stench, and he's a very funny person. And anyway, I would just sort of dive bomb the markers at the paper and just go at it with anger and come up with these really bold things. And it was very cathartic, both physically and emotionally. And yeah, came up with some fairly decent artwork in a sort of Matt Groening life on in hell?
Life in hell, yeah.
Sort of way, and I was really amazed.
And you know, caller, it's interesting you mentioned Matt because he was a classmate of Linda Berry's.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I adore Linda Berry, too. I really related to her sort of wounded childhood stuff, too. And it's sort of interesting. It's been 21 years since I started out with this whole rediscovering the wounded part of myself, and I figured that part of me was old enough to grow up and get an apartment of its own, and sort of set it on its way. And it's been really, again, cathartic, and it's just been great.
Well, that's thank
it.
You.
Alrighty.
Thank you for that story.
Alrighty.
Absolutely.
I love that, grow up and get an apartment of its own. I mean, that's the kind of humor that's so empowering.
Absolutely.
I love that line.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And,
that's a good thing to tell any of our demons, isn't it?
That's right.
You know?
It's time for you to go out and get a job.
That's right.
You know, sometimes I say that our demons have outgrown their job description. You know, that we kind of invited them in for a purpose that protected us maybe at the time, but You know, they need to sort of change what they do at this point.
There
we need
go.
To change our relationship with them.
There you go. They've outgrown their job description.
Yeah. This caller mentioned a very interesting thing I've observed, too. I do an ongoing women's group privately that's a women's art group. It's not a therapy group, but it's very therapeutic because it's therapeutic for women to get together and support each other and make art. And one of the things that I've noticed over time is that, as this caller said, that you know, we start out maybe, and maybe we continue to do art for self-expression, and that is enough of an end in itself. The interesting side effect is that sometimes the more we do, the more we actually look at it and say, hey, that looks like art. And maybe what that means is it's something that becomes more coherent to us and more meaningful to us and also to others. So that's kind of an exciting thing that happens as well.
Well, as is often the case, as we are about to wrap things up, we start getting the calls, and we have another caller, and we are very happy to talk with you. So, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is Nina. And
hi, Nina.
I so enjoyed listening to your talk this morning, and I want to just say that everything you've said really rings true with me and my personal experience. And I really also enjoyed Jeff's commentary earlier on the differentiation between healing and cure. And from my experience, healing is a process that involves my active participation in a
yes.
creative process.
Good point.
And in times of crisis, for me, I chose various mediums, and one was the written one in which I allowed myself for the first time to let go of all constraints that, as some of your earlier callers expressed, are put on us through our upbringing. You're not good enough. This is not right. You'll never, you know, so I just mm-hmm. let it flow. And never thought about what I am writing. And through that, I discovered layers and layers that had been buried. And I would say it is very cathartic and also expresses that healing from deep within to rediscover our true self.
Yes, yes, that's very well put.
Absolutely. And yes, that whole idea of, again, we're back to that cure and healing. And Nina, you know, you're just reminding me of the idea that healing is something that's done with us and
mm-hmm.
cure is something that's done to us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm
mm-hmm.
playing with those prepositions again. But
yes, but yeah, very that's a very mm-hmm. important point. I appreciate your bringing that up. Yes.
Yes, and I think for different individuals. For myself, I find that when I'm in crisis, I am driven to express myself more creatively, whatever it is that I choose at the time. But when that process helps me to get through the crisis, I tend to put it aside because conventions have always taught me that, oh, this is frivolous. You're not really allowed to continue using this as an expression and become truly part of your living. So going back to more practical versus, you know, the
right.
creative processes, and I think in essence both are, I mean, I feel that without giving ourselves permission to be creative in whatever it is that we do and not just focus constantly on what is practical and pragmatic, we lose a part of ourselves if we don't allow that to be expressed.
I absolutely agree with you. And you're right. It's a very real loss. And I think a lot of people are going around with grief about that loss without even realizing what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I find that keeping a visual journal where I both write and
yes.
and play around with art is helpful in keeping me on track. And sometimes I actually don't feel driven to do it, and I kind of force myself. And then once I start, I have, you know, then I just keep going and start
yes.
really enjoying the process. But, you know, sometimes it's just drawing my coffee cup or, you know, a funny, wonky version of it or something. It doesn't have to be profound. You just kind of keep it flowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when you just said it doesn't have to be profound, it can and should often be just very playful.
Yes, yes, which is, I guess, in a way, in its own way, very profound. But
yes.
Yeah, but we don't think of it that way. Yes,
because
yes.
The results, when we look at it, are sometimes astounding.
That's right. That's right.
So and, thank you so
oh,
much.
Oh well, thank
and,
you.
And I am very inspired by this talk to go back and express myself more creatively.
Oh, I'm so pleased. That's my whole goal in life.
Thank you.
Great.
So you have
you.
A lovely day, and thanks.
You too.
Thanks so much for calling, Nina.
Thank you.
Okay.
Goodbye.
All right, so I guess it's about time to wrap things up. Or do we have another caller? No, so we're good?